What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host, of course, is Thomas Drantz. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Always an exciting show on a Wednesday. We'll do the crossover with Donnie and Dolly, Don Taylor, Rick Dollywall. In just a few minutes here, Jason Bukala will join us at 1 o'clock as well. The Canucks are practicing right now, so we can dive into some of the news out of practice during the whiteboard in the final segment, too. And lots to discuss today. Drantzer, what's going on, man?
I thought it was an interesting game last night.
Yeah, very much so.
I thought the Canucks played somewhere between well and fine.
This was the debate that was raging in the bullpen before the show.
We'll get Don and Sir Isaac Newton over there to chime in. And we have a camera. I posted a photo of Rick eating an apple on Twitter, and I just saw him see the tweet and laugh. So that made me laugh.
Very exciting.
I thought it was one of those weird ones, Jamie, where the individual result was not good,
mm-hmm.
in that they lost in regulation.
Well, and then you take into account the road trip, right? And they're 2-4 on the road, the homestand. They're 2-4 on the homestand, and that looks ugly and all of that.
Well, and honestly,
it is ugly.
A lot of empty seats, man. Like a really subdued vibe. Feels like the Canucks are, you know, honestly, from the simple perspective of like an entertainment product, this was a really tough road trip for Canucks fans. Not a lot of fun at the rink. Some dramatics off the ice, obviously, mm-hmm. with JT Miller's leave. And then really like a premium opponent, an original six team, a 1994 Stanley Cup Finals rematch. And like there was a lot of empty red seats in the lower bowl. So, you know, I thought it was like a tough night individually, and yet there was a lot of stuff big picture that I take away from that game and say, hey, look, like there's a lot of reason to believe that this team can successfully hold the fort in the interim, even if they are shorthanded, you know, a top forward, a 40 goal scorer and a Vezina caliber goaltender, even if it's over the balance of this entire road trip, which may not be the case.
Yeah. Well, and also I think even beyond the result and some of the specific hockey stuff that you're getting at and that we can dig into, you know, we talked with Landon Ferraro yesterday about the track record in the recent NHL of teams getting really tough news and then laying an egg that night,
yeah.
right? Because it's just really hard to emotionally recover from it. And they didn't do that.
No.
And I think they deserve a lot of kudos and a lot of credit for not doing that. The effort was there. Obviously, Quinn Hughes scores an awesome goal 30 seconds into the game, basically, right? Sets the tone. You know, it wasn't like, oh, they were so unlucky to lose or anything. The Rangers deserved to win, I think.
But the Rangers absolutely deserved
to win. But the effort was there, right? And it wasn't, we're shell-shocked, we can't do anything. And I think they deserve a lot of credit for that in the circumstances.
And the Canucks had a shot, and they pressed hard. I mean, right down to the wire, you had Connor Garland getting a chance in close, a really nice entry by Elias mm-hmm. Pettersson to sort of set that up. I mean, I thought there was a fair bit to like from Vancouver's battle level and overall performance. And you know, even little things like the JT Miller, Quinn Hughes, Hronek self-match minutes are sort of the tip of the spear for the Canucks, attack. Well, it looked pretty good with 40 and 43, right? Kiefer Sherwood, beast game. Connor Garland, beast game. Like, you saw the seams, or that's not the way to put it. You saw the shape of how the Canucks can continue to grind out wins, you know, at a 650 point percentage pace, maybe not, but like at a 590, mm-hmm, 580 mm-hmm. point percentage pace. You saw the shape of how the Canucks can stay in the mix over the short term here, which is what they need to do. Just keep pace in the Pacific and be ready to roll once you get people
back, get everyone back,
and once you have a chance to run downhill again, down the stretch and in the second half. Because, look, let's be real. You need to win the Pacific. If you want to win the Stanley Cup, you need to win the Pacific and let Edmonton and Vegas duke it out in the first round. Crucial. Very
high
leverage.
Home ice when you're playing one of those two teams.
You need it.
Yeah.
Absolutely need it. And I think you could see the contours of how the Canucks can sort of stay in that mix, maintain their positioning within striking distance over the course of the next 2-3 weeks, which I expect to be pretty challenging.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, right? And, obviously they deserve a lot of credit for the performance they put in last night, I think, given the circumstances. But there's also always the question of, is that a one-game adrenaline thing, right? And then does the reality of it start to set in a little bit when it's not just one game that you're dealing with it, right? But you're actually dealing with the day-to-day, game-to-game absence of a player as important as JT Miller, not to mention Brock Besser still, not to mention Thatcher Demko still as well. So the challenge will be, and, Rick Tocchet spoke about it after the game last night, right? It's using it as fuel. It's taking that experience, using the adversity as fuel. It's one thing to do it in a one game sample. Can they keep it up until they start getting those reinforcements back? And, Elias Pettersson, an interesting figure coming out of last night, right? Because he turns the puck over on the eventual game winning goal. Outside of that play, and that's a major asterisk, that's a major caveat, right, given the importance of the goal, outside of that play, I think he did a lot of the things that you'd want to see him do in JT Miller's absence.
Without question. And, there was a lot of blame to go around on that goal.
Mm-hmm.
Pettersson among them. I mean, he got beat to the net by Kreider, but it was a brilliant piece of work from Riley Smith. Like, that was an elite play. That's like a Justin Williams caliber sequence from Riley Smith, who's honestly a massively underrated, just like solid, connective, top six compliment. I thought that was, I honestly saw that as more like tip your cap. That was wildly creative stuff, a great play from the Rangers winger, mm-hmm. as opposed to like this unforgivable defensive breakdown. He got beat to the net by Chris Kreider. One of the biggest, fastest human beings in the NHL.
Yes, a very fast skater, yep.
Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, is he culpable on it? Sure. Is it what a breakdown. It's just not. I'm sorry.
I don't think you throw out the positives from the game because of it.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
It's not that kind of breakdown.
Oh, and even
it's
if you...
Where you have to mention it, but it doesn't eliminate all the good stuff he did in the game
And even if you do factor it in... You'd still say, well, the Canucks still won his minutes. They were still 2-1 at 5-on-5 on the scoreboard and up, 11-5 on the shot clock, 12-5 on the shot clock. So you'd still look at it and say, process-wise, you like it. Process-wise, you can win with that. The Canucks are able to preserve their edge at the top of the lineup, even without big number 9 in the lineup. That's huge for this team.
All right, I was told to wait until Rick Dhaliwal had put his headset on. He has put his headset on. So let's start the crossover here on Canucks Talk. We do it every Wednesday. It's the crossover with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. They're the hosts of Donnie and Dolly, which you can check out Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV. Rick, Don, how's it going, fellas?
Couldn't be better.
Very well. Very well.
Yeah.
I've got a cold, but other than that, we're good.
Yes. I've noticed tuning in over the last few days, Donnie, but you're playing hurt. You're fighting through it.
It's fine. You're not the only one.
What?
Yeah.
What? Am I not supposed to notice that his voice sounds different? Come on. It's not an insult. I'm just saying.
No, I'm just saying, no, you're not the only one who's noticed. I'm fighting through.
Rick, I also got to say, I'm really.
Much like the Canucks last night.
I'm really enjoying your presence on Blue Sky. I feel like we're seeing a little bit more. We're seeing a little bit more of like the behind the scenes Rick on Blue Sky than we do on Twitter. I'm enjoying it.
We're trying to get Donnie to move over to Blue Sky, but I think it might be an issue. We got to get Drance on there. I'd love to have some goes at Drance on Blue Sky.
I've heard that Blue Sky is like old Twitter, where you can say stuff without like the consequences of your mentions filling up with like hateful drivel. So I'm Blue Sky curious, but I find it daunting to imagine running a network of burners on Blue Sky as well. That seems like a lot of work.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you got 4 or 5 of those, right?
Got to restart the whole network.
Yeah, Thomas. Blue Sky. How many burners you got, Thomas?
0.
Yeah.
All right. What do you guys think
of the
game?
What everybody says. Anyways,
what do you guys think of the game last night, given the circumstances for the Canucks?
Well, you nailed it there. Given the circumstances, I thought the effort was real positive. Garland, and given what he's gone through. He played, so there's that. Unlike everything else, everybody else on the roster who seems to be, well, not on the roster right now, but Garland, Sherwood, I thought Pedersen was great, save for the giveaway at the end, or the, or getting checked at the end. But now I thought it was great. It was funny because you look at, the, they end up the homestand 2-4, six-game homestand 2-4. We all know about their poor home record. And yet, and I don't know what the postgame show was like, Rick, on 650, but I just sensed a lot of people going, you know what, there are excuses here, and better times ahead once things get turned around, adversity-wise.
Yeah, it felt like Thomas. You go.
No Demko, no Besser, no Miller. There wasn't a lot of confidence in the market that they could keep it close. I mean, I had people texting me, they're going to lose 7-1. It's always a great sign, when they play as competitively as they did. Good effort last night with so many big names out of the lineup, and so many guys came to the forefront. Garland was unbelievable. He gives you 20 minutes now every night. You know, he drew a couple of penalties, tied the game. He's really the heartbeat of this team lately, the last few weeks. Sherwood, I don't know where to start, guys, with Sherwood. He has been their best offseason signing. And nothing against DeBrusk. And, DeBrusk is
Lankinen.
Going. Yeah, Lankinen too. You're right, Don. But DeBrusk has had 3 goals in 18 games. Mm-hmm. 15 times he's been blanked. All 3 of his goals on that California trip. And, I know people are starting to, they got to get him going for sure. He has got no goals in 6 games. And now with Miller and Besser out, his importance is even much, much more. Is he's got to pick up some of that slack. But Sherwood, he's hanging up high in the top 6. 7 team-leading shots last night, 10 hits. He's just been an absolute great find for this hockey club. And 16 minutes last night, always first on the forecheck, hard to play against. Just can't stop raving about
this
guy. Yes,
somebody texted into our Delaney's OK Taron Langley inbox. I love doing that.
Hey, Dunbar Lumber. Wow, Kiefer Sherwood of you.
Hey.
Just in the mix. Yeah. in the thick of it, Donnie. What a pass. Can pick up some wood.
Dunbar Lumber guys, they beat poor Moody last year. Anyway, it's a long story. But somebody compared him, Kiefer Sherwood, to Stan Smeal. Now, Kiefer hasn't dropped the gloves like Stan used to, but somebody who's just in on the forecheck, hitting people with some offensive flair there as well. I think that was a pretty good comparison. Does that mean 44 goes up into the rafters? I'm not like Stan's number 12. I'm not so sure about that. But I agreed with that opinion, at least from what we've seen of him so far.
Who did you compare to Wayne Gretzky earlier, Don? You're doing everything, right? Wasn't it earlier this season?
Okay,
you dropped the Gretzky comparison?
Now that goes...
Who was it
No. Well, if you want to go way back, I compared Mason Raymond's skating style Wayne Gretzky's Wayne Gretzky's skating style. And, of course, this was back in the Pratt days. Pratt didn't get what I was talking about. So he was saying that I said Mason Raymond was the next Wayne Gretzky. All I said was his skating style was similar. And I know a lot of people agreed with me, but 98% of people didn't. And Pratt was one of them. So I never heard the end of it.
Mason Raymond.
I'll stand by that comparison.
Mason Raymond Wayne Gretzky and Kiefer Sherwood to Stan Smeal. There we go.
No, but
take it to the bank.
No, but the in defense of Don, the comparison to Stan Smeal and Sherwood was in our text line, and it wasn't the only one. We've had 2 or 3, and
nobody was comparing Raymond to Gretzky, yeah. But
if for those of us that watched Stan play in the 80s, he was the heartbeat of the franchise for many, many, many years. And that's why his jersey's up in the rafters.
My favorite Kiefer Sherwood play wasn't the goal last night. He got a pass from Pedersen on the rush, and he faked a slap shot, made Shesterkin move just a sec, and then he changed the angle on his wrist shot and unleashed one of 3 wrist shots that he took on Shesterkin that handcuffed him. Like that he had to fight off and couldn't control the rebound, which is tough to do given that Shesterkin is the best goaltender on the planet right now. Shesterkin gloves it to the corner, and Mika Zibanejad is first to retrieve it. Sherwood's going to go for a change, but first he goes over to Zibanejad, and he looks like he's going to hit him. Zibanejad dramatically bails out of the contact, and Sherwood just slowly skated away, chirping him the entire way to the bench. And I was just like, I love that. I love this guy. This is great. That lost art in the game. Honestly, you just don't see enough of that, in my view, these days, but you see it every single night. Just that game within a game stuff from Kiefer Sherwood, something this team needed, right? Like, so many of the guys that he's replacing, guys like Sam Lafferty, just didn't play to that identity consistently enough for this team, and it mattered when the chips were down in the playoffs. Sherwood does it every single shift.
Well, you know, everybody was talking and how bad it was for the Canucks. Such a negative to lose Zadorov. I know he plays another position, but you mentioned the game within a game,
yes,
and the chirping.
Yep.
We saw what Zadorov did with Kane last year. I don't think things are necessarily trending this way, but do you not want to see Kiefer Sherwood in a playoff game,
yeah,
in a playoff series, a real edgy playoff series, and the role he could play?
Heck
like
yeah.
With that game within a game, not to mention scoring goals,
yep,
hitting, that sort of thing. That would be just absolutely fabulous. So in a strange way, I think they've replaced Zadorov with Sherwood. If you get my drift,
yeah,
it's kind of like the Bremen Gretzky comparison.
No, I get this
you
one.
Saw
Don't
Lafferty,
worry.
You saw Lafferty, McKayev get moved to the top six last year, guys. They couldn't hang in there, and when they were in there, they didn't produce. This is amazing to me that not only is Sherwood hanging in the top six, I know it's only been 2-3 games, but he's playing well there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of guys on the fourth line, when they get moved in the top six, they last a shift or a period or a game, and then they're right back in the bottom six. I don't know. I'm waiting patiently to see if he can hang with Pettersson on that line for how many more games. Remember DiGiuseppe was in there a year ago. Remember he scored in Ottawa and everyone was, oh my God, this guy is
Hoglander.
Hoglander. So these guys get put in the top six and then sometimes they get knocked out. But I want to see how long he can hang with Pettersson on that line.
Well, if we're throwing out comps to Canucks icons, how about Alex Burrows, right? Bottom six player who gets his shot in the top six, playing with more
undrafted,
skilled players and shows a little, undrafted, exactly, shows that he has the talent not just to do it for a stint, but to hang there and compliment them.
Really good at tennis.
Do we know Kiefer Sherwood is really good at tennis?
I have no idea.
Is he a ball hockey guy?
Pickleball.
Sherwood's been a nice story, and he brought some of that FU, right, that Tockett was talking about the team missing in Miller's absence last night. The club's going to need more of it, without question. You sort of yada-yada'd the DeBrusque side of this, though, Rick, but if this team's going to stay afloat, if Besser doesn't go on this road trip, and I'm guessing we'll find out more after practice today, but he's not practicing today. After skating yesterday, it's not like he's escalating, you know, the way we might expect a player in the protocol to. We don't know what Demko's timeline is, right? And we do assume that JT Miller is going to be absent for this entire six-game road trip coming up. I mean, this team does need more from Jake DeBrusque here, right?
Absolutely. And remember those preseason polls? And I know in July and August, it's hard to do all sports radio. Believe me, it's tough. You'd rather be sitting on
Well, we wouldn't know that right now.
We wouldn't know that. But listen, all those stories about DeBrusque is going to score 30 this year. He's going to score 35. He's going to score 40. He, by his own admission, would probably be saying, look, I didn't think I'd have 3 goals after 18 games with the Canucks. He's on pace for 13, right? But you need them now more than ever, especially with Besser and Miller out. And you're going to start this road trip most likely without Besser and Miller. And you got these two wide open spots in the top six that need other guys to pick it up. Thank goodness for Garland. And thank goodness for Sherwood for stepping into those roles last night and producing. And boy, because if those two guys don't produce last night, what's it looking like? But he's got to pick it up. Bottom line, he's been moved up line one, line two, line three. He's played with every center on the team almost. It's time for him now to find some chemistry with someone and start showing why the Canucks went out and gave him the biggest free agent contract on July 1st.
It's just so hard to criticize Jake DeBrusque. And you know what? Mm-hmm. Like, look, you're in the public eye. You're making good money. Your resume is pretty darn good. High expectations. So there are those expectations. But he's such a nice guy. Yep. And Thomas, I know you've interviewed him, and he comes across as so intelligent, such a nice guy. But Rick's right. The bottom line, 3 goals in 18 games. And what did you say he was on pace for?
13. 13. You did the homework. He's on pace for 13.
Yeah, I had to teach Rick about cross-multiplying today to come up with that. But anyway.
Stop. I asked you to tell me what pace he's on, and you went into some big grade 12 math lesson.
I don't think it was grade 12, to be honest with you.
Anyways.
You had to be there.
Grade eight. Grade eight, maybe.
I would love to see Dollywall learns math.
That'd be a good segment for you guys. Get out the whiteboard and put some equations there.
He wasn't the only one.
Hey. Like the rest of the 98% of the rest of the Vancouver sports media, I barely got past grade 12.
Me too.
But you make the point about DeBrusque.
Including you, Drance.
Yeah. We know that's not true, but okay. I have many leather-bound books, Rick.
Yeah.
Sure, okay. I was in school way too long.
That's not all you have is leather-bound.
I got a feeling you got other leather stuff, too. But listen, you come across as you went to Harvard or Princeton, Drance. You're just like the rest of us. You barely got past grade 12.
Shots fired. All right. But the point about DeBrusque needing to step up in Miller's absence, of course, it's true. The other group of guys I'm looking at is the collection of young forwards on this team. And, you know, I'm counting guys who are kind of still establishing themselves in the NHL, Ratu, Baines, Lekkomäki, who's up now. I'll even throw Nils Höglander in that mix, though, as well, right? I mean, the organization has carved out space for these guys on the roster. I think we've seen flashes from all of them, but it hasn't really come together. And, you know, I'm waiting to see, and I'm wondering if at least one of those guys can step up and really solidify their role as a contributor on this team here in this stretch.
I'm really worried about Höglander. It looks like he's fully entrenched back in Tocchet's doghouse. Yeah. Last night, 10 minutes, you know, you got Miller Besser out. You know, he's taking penalties now. It looks like, I think, 3 games in a row he's taking penalties. Look, I'm really worried about him. And, you know, 24 goals last year. This is the time when you should elevate him. And when, you know, you got two really good offensive hockey players out, is to elevate him. But he is clearly entrenched. And you gave this guy $3 million, a new contract, you know, and guess what? It's gone backwards. And he's on the coach's fourth line, and it doesn't look like he's going to get off that line anytime soon. I mean, you really got to wonder about his future. The Canucks are out there looking for defensemen. And the one of the pieces I'm sure teams are going to ask about, and they do every year, is Höglander. And the Canucks are going to have to make – if he's not going to be Tocchet's type of guy, then you got to move him.
See, now this is exactly the opposite of what you said on our show today.
Stop it.
When I brought up the possibility of trading Nils Höglander, because one of the first things I thought of, and I think Ruff and Ruff were talking about it earlier today, about how one of the first things that hit me when I heard that contract was, boy, 24 goals, none on the power play. That's a tradable contract. And it's not the first thing that came to mind, but it was definitely right up there. And I think now that you've changed your tune, apparently, that you're bang on.
He's a young drafted Vancouver player, just scored 24 goals. He got a real nice contract based off of that and showing up the training camp.
But it is movable.
He was one of the most conditioned guys at camp. And when the Canucks saw his results at camp, they turned around that same day and called his agent and said, let's talk contract. Don, you don't sign him for 3 years to make him trade bait 4 months down the road. Like, did Alvin not talk to Tocchet and say, look, if this guy's not your type of guy, we're not going to sign him to 3 years. Like,
but things can change. But my point is, though, that it's a movable contract.
They might move him, Don.
I would think.
I would think that Pittsburgh and other teams would have him locked in as a guy they would want.
They signed Kuzmenko, right? Now, a little bit of a different situation, and that was just as Tocchet was making the transition. Yeah. But they signed him and then ended up trading him away. So, like, I agree with you, Ricky.
That was more like defusing a time bomb.
Because he was a UFA.
Well, because the contract
they had to make a decision.
And no, and because the contract was so, you'd have to pay to get out from it.
Yeah.
If they held it too much longer.
But I'm just saying.
And they knew that.
What's one of the things of the Jim Rutherford MO? It's you're not afraid to move on from a decision, right? You don't get committed just because you signed a guy to a contract. Mm. That doesn't mean they're going to trade Höglander, but it wouldn't be out of step with things we've seen from this management group in the past.
It wouldn't be, but teams have been asking for this player for a long time. There's been a lot of time where
absolutely,
and there's been a lot of time where he's been, you know, getting irregular minutes or struggling to establish himself for a coach that seems skeptical. Patrick Alvin and company have held firm to their belief about, in Hoglander, and the contract that they extended him to, I think, speaks to that belief, as does their reluctance to include him in deals at the deadline last year while big game hunting.
Yep. Calgary really wanted him. So Calgary really wanted him.
Yeah, and I don't think they were the only one. So, you know, Look, I Hoglander obviously needs to find a way back up the lineup, clearly. But, man, I would be pretty surprised, I think. I think it would require a pretty significant change of organizational heart to move Hoglander for, like, an expiring veteran defender. You know, you're talking about a young right. defender, a like piece?
Yep.
Sure, that's a different matter. But for a Marcus Pettersson type or an expiring veteran defender, man, that would surprise me.
Mm-hmm. But when I haven't heard from Rick Tocchet, when Rick Tocchet, those few times he's praised Hoglander is when he's effective on the forecheck.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen that. Nobody has for a long time.
Been a tough week.
So he's got to get back to doing that relatively simple thing and get back to doing that and get back in the coach's books and get it back into that top six if he can.
Absolutely.
Especially right now with the Besser not there and Miller not there.
Right nice. Now he's on pace for fewer than 13 goals.
Oof.
Let me do the multiplication on that. I'll get back to you.
By the way, just on the trade front, Rick, whoa. I mean, I think we all expect them to do something on the blue line at some point here, but does this rash of kind of bad luck, right? Missing Miller, missing Besser, still no Demko. Do you think it accelerates maybe what they're trying to do on the trade front a little bit?
Well, and then look at the center ice position. I'm a little worried, how long are they going to be without Miller? I don't know. Nobody has that answer, but he's not going on the road trip. So their next home game, I think, is December 6th against Columbus. Look at the middle, Pettersson, Suter, Bluger, and Ratu. They haven't been this weak up the middle in a long time. Right, they remember they have Pettersson, Miller, and Horvat. Then Pettersson, Miller, and Lindholm. They've been so strong up the middle the last 3, 4, 5 years. And right now, I don't know when Miller's back, but I wonder if do you have to get somebody there to plug in at center for a while?
I think they need another defenseman.
Yeah, defenseman for sure, Don.
Before a center, Miller's coming back.
And Soucy and Myers are obviously struggling. Everybody in the world sees it. They know everybody in the world sees their struggles. There's a photo today at practice out of UBC, and Talk is working with Myers. And just a 5 minutes one-on-one with Myers. Mm. Like, look, the Canucks brought Myers back because they were so happy with him last year. And Myers had told his agent that I want to go back to Vancouver. So it was a marriage that was going to happen. But, I mean, right now, their defense, they're giving up way too many goals. This homestand, oh, my goodness. And they've given up, I think, 4 or more goals 7 times at home this year. That's just not talking hockey.
No, five or more.
Five. Yeah.
They were on the ice for another 2 5-on-5 goals against last night. Soucy played fewer minutes than Brännström, right? I mean, we're at the point where
only 14.
Yeah, we're at the point where
this
team needs to consider internal options if they can't make a trade quickly. This second pair, for the most part, they don't have to they don't even have to win their minutes. They just have to limit the damage.
Yeah.
And right now they're teetering on the edge of not even being they're giving back all of what Hughes and Hronek are doing in terms of winning the matchup. I don't even know what the solution is. I was talking to some pro scouts about it last night. What are you seeing? Because I like these players. We've seen them succeed. They succeeded last year. What are you seeing? And the fact is that the pace isn't there. They don't look confident enough to make plays, and you can't hide on defense. You know, if one player in a partnership is struggling, it can spill over to the other one, and it just seems like Soucy started the season a little bit slowly, and then it spilled over to Myers, and now they kind of can't get out of it.
Well, you mentioned all those elements to what makes a good defenseman, Thomason. One thing, and Tocchet talks about it a lot, I wonder if this is what he was talking about at practice today, boxing out.
Yeah.
You know, you're not sure what to do. Pick somebody and make sure he doesn't he doesn't pounce on a loose puck. And I think that to me would be the number one concern with that defense pairing is just, and it's such a simple minor hockey thing that we're talking about. You know, boxing out, finding somebody and eliminating them from the possibility of pouncing on a rebound. And I'll bet you that's what was talking to Myers about today.
Well, and look at the winning goal. He was in the corner, and there was an odd man situation in front of the net. And here's another one for you guys. Look at Quinn Hughes' minutes. 28 minutes last night, 27 Nashville. That was after 25 against Chicago. And when you don't have confidence in certain guys on the blue line, that's exactly when Quinn Hughes' minutes start soaring.
Especially when you're behind in a game.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we got to let you guys go, but I want to pass this along from the Dunbar Lumber text line. Our listener Dave in Cedar saying that his daughter is doing cross multiplication in grade 6 currently. So we're talking grade 6 level math here. That's from Dave in Cedar. Maybe she's ahead of her grade level.
It didn't happen like that.
Oh, yes, it did.
No, I said to Donnie, what is he on pace for? And then Donnie got his pen and paper out, and then he said 13.
Most people would get their phones out.
Yeah.
Well, Henderson, but I'm old, so I'll give you that.
It was as simple as Donnie, what's he on pace for? Donnie got the number. Bottom line, boom.
Dollywall in math class, they were like, what's 5 times 5? And he was like, Garth Butcher.
All right, we'll leave it there.
You know what? I'm gonna knock that smug smile off your face.
Once he's on Blue Sky, you go at him, Rick. Once he's on Blue Sky, all right.
Yeah,
we'll talk next week.
Come on over.
We'll
come
talk
on over
next week, fellas. Thanks for doing
Bye.
This. That is Don Taylor and Rick Dollywall joining us for the crossover as they do every Wednesday. You can catch him on Donnie and Dolly 10 to noon Monday to Friday on Czech TV.
Because Rick is just obsessed with the 80s. So Garth Butcher.
Yeah.
5 times 5.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a...
I don't think he got it.
No, I don't know what he did.
My bad.
I don't know that he did. All right, we'll take a break. Lots more to get into with the Canucks, including what they can do to, as you say, hold the fort during JT Miller's absence, however long that ends up being.
It's fort holding season.
It's fort holding season, baby. Everyone's favorite part of the year. We'll talk about that lots more next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We're live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, the Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber. And Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. And we are, of course, very grateful to the good folks at Dunbar Lumber for sponsoring the text line, as much as Don Taylor tries to muddy the issue when he comes on here for the crossover. By the way, I believe it was Caleb who texted in that he was going to use that discussion at the end. There is an example for the grade 6 kids I tutor of why math is important. There you go. You can use math to quantify just how much your favorite hockey team's big free agent acquisitions are underperforming. That's the value, the true value of math when you get right down to it. So you can do those sorts of calculations.
Someone's saying that I corrected Rick on the 13-goal pace thing and got it wrong, but I didn't correct anybody.
Well, you corrected that guy just now.
That's true. That guy's unhinged, though, so whatever.
All right. So, just getting a little bit into last night's results, but also looking ahead to this upcoming 6-game road trip that the Canucks are going on. They'll play Travis Green and the Ottawa Senators on Saturday. They got a few days off here to prepare, and of course, very difficult circumstances, right? No JT Miller and Rick Dollywell and others reporting that they don't expect him to be on this trip. Brock Besser not practicing today, so that we don't know, but you know, he skated yesterday. You'd maybe hope, like, okay, does he graduate to
non-contact participants, something like that today. Instead, he's not skating.
Well, and they're also out at UBC where the team can't really like schedule an injured player skate outside the sort of glimpses of the media because they just have less control over the building. And he wasn't on the ice beforehand either. So, I mean, Rick Tocchet surely will have an update, but I would assume that this is not great news. At this point, I'm like comfortable saying that, and everyone knows how sort of risk averse I tend to be about these sorts of things. But if Besser doesn't skate today, I would see that as a sign that his absence may be a little bit more prolonged as opposed to something where he's ramping up in linear fashion over the course of this week.
You would hope to see that kind of step-by-step progression following on him skating yesterday, right? And who knows, we'll get an update, but it doesn't, at least from right now, it doesn't look like that's happening. And so very difficult circumstances for the Canucks to be going on this road trip now. And you know, we talked a little bit about Elias Pettersson stepping up and just the way his line was able to control play, really the only line that was able to control play for the Canucks last night against the Rangers. And of course, the other player getting a lot of love for their performance, or one of the other players, and we touched on it briefly with Donnie and Rick, is Connor Garland. And dealing with his own challenging circumstances, albeit very positive, very happy for his family, expecting the birth of their first child, but you know, not at morning skate, shows up late to the rink, is still in the lineup and goes out, plays really well, and scores a goal. And as much as we look at it and say, okay, Elias Pettersson, Quinn Hughes, they're the guys that have to step up, that's absolutely true. How often have we talked about, you know, once you get past Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes and JT Miller, the best play driver on the team is Connor Garland, right? And so now, yeah, you need Elias Pettersson to be able to drive play at the top of the lineup, to be able to play at an elite level. But this might be Connor Garland's opportunity to drive a top six line on his own for an extended period. And if he keeps doing what he's doing, that could be a big part of the Canucks holding the fort in JT Miller's absence.
Yeah, I mean, look, I've often insisted that Connor Garland is a top line caliber player. And I don't know how seriously people have taken that. I don't think they've taken it very seriously at all, to be totally honest with you. But I believe it. And I do think that if the Canucks, you know, require a player to, you know, look, he played a lot last night. He's going to play a lot here, especially if both Besser and Miller are absent from the Canucks lineup over the duration of this road trip or for large portions of it, which we, at this point, I think expect.
Yeah.
And, you know, look, I think Garland has emerged as... I think Garland is appreciated now in this market for what he is. You know, I do feel like the unfortunate trade that brought him here, which was, you know, still not a winner, by the way, even though Garland is a really good player. I feel like that's kind of, people have moved past that, I think, now, right? I think people appreciate Garland's effort. They understand how valuable he can be. And that's a big change, too, from, you know, like the later stages of the Bruce Boudreau era where Garland was, you know, widely viewed as untradeable and a semi-frequent franchise or fan base whipping boy. And yet I still think there's this view of Garland as, you know, like one of those guys who's an elite third liner, but maybe not a top of the lineup guy on an elite team. And I still think that's wrong. Like, I still think that there's a level to Garland's game where he can be great, where he can be, you know, a difference maker in a really high leverage role, the reason a good team wins games. And this is a chance. He's going to probably play top line minutes over the next six games.
Yesterday, two most used forwards, Connor Garland, all situations, number one, just 2 seconds under 21 minutes, 2058, Elias Pettersson, 2040.
Yep.
Those are going to be your two most used forwards. Those are going to be your two best forwards while Miller and Brock Best are out of the lineup, right? Like, those are your two best forwards. Connor Garland is the second best forward healthy on this team in the lineup right now. Yes, you need to see more from Jake DeBrusk. You'd love to see Nils Höglander refine his game, reestablish that trust, all of those things. But again, it's Pettersson and Garland. Those are the guys who are going to drive at the top of your lineup. And again, as you're saying, you know, can he kind of finally shed that, well, you love him on the third line, you know, third line spark plug, can go up against softer competition and get a little sheltered minutes. You know, he can eat in those situations. Can he shed that and just be like, no, he's a really good top six player? That's the opportunity in front of him.
Well, and for what it's worth, I mean, I think he already has in the minds of Rick Tocchet's mind.
Yeah.
You know, the truth is that Connor Garland was playing top 6 minutes for this team in the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. In this team's most important games, right, he was entrusted in a second line role in the postseason last year. I think he was fifth among Canucks forwards in 5-on-5 ice time in the playoffs. So in some ways, I think internally, or at least for this coaching staff, I think that label's already been shed. But I still think there's, you know, like a polarizing assessment of Garland's game within the league, within the industry, within fans. And I do think that this could mark the end of that. I do think that this is a really big opportunity for him to show what he can do. That said, you know, I'm going to keep banging this drum because it's like something that I just will never stop doing until I get to see it. And get to see it for 305 on 5 minutes. That's what I want. But I do sort of wonder, as well as Sherwood played, and, you know, there were signs, I thought, last night that Dakota Joshua's timing is coming back. Certainly that pass to Connor Garland that he hit him on the 3-3 goal was excellent. I thought you saw him be more impactful without the puck as an F1 and doing some of the Dakota Joshua difference-making stuff that we saw so often last season.
I would say Joshua's return to this point looks exactly kind of what I would expect him getting back to an impact player.
The ramp up.
There's been nothing concerning in it.
No.
You've seen the progress, as you said. You start to see more signs yesterday. It's coming for Dakota Joshua.
It's coming. And I sort of wonder, you know, in Hold the Fort season, whether or not the Canucks should consider just loading up the top of their lineup, right? And playing, for example, Dakota Joshua with Pettersson and Garland, right? So you have that way, I rate Connor Garland as a top of the lineup piece.
Mm-hmm.
I rate Brock Besser as a top of the lineup piece. I rate JT Miller as a top of the lineup piece. I rate Elias Pettersson as a top of the lineup piece. And you know, that's kind of it. I think Jake DeBrus could be, but I kind of see him more as a complimentary guy who can play on your top line as opposed to a bona fide top of the lineup piece in his own right. And if you do that and go with some sort of second line that's, you know, some combination of DeBrus, Suter, and you know, one of Hoglander or Sherwood.
Yeah, Sherwood, yeah.
Right? I think, yeah, or Lekarimäki, although, I mean, I don't know. Do you think it's too early? I think he's looked good. I think there's nothing about what we've seen that has like dented my optimism in Lekarimäki, but does he look ready for prime time to you?
Well, what's prime time? Could you keep playing him in the NHL?
Yes. Oh, sure.
Is he going to be a needle mover right now? No,
well,
probably not.
So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no.
Right.
But it hasn't been like, I don't think he's done anything where it's like, I don't know, he played, you know, 13 minutes, 14 minutes last night. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, this guy is unplayable, but
no.
Would he be better served playing massive minutes in Abbotsford is the question.
As you go on this road trip, does he help you win in a third line role and on the power play?
Yeah.
Or not? Like, what do you think? I'm genuinely asking. I'd say no, personally. I think he can.
I'm on the fence, to be honest.
I think there's a difference, though, between can he hack it? Like, can he
do
the job?
Yes, I know what you mean. And can he actually, like, produce in whatever way you want to quantify
that? Can he do the job? I think yes. Can he help you win? I'm not sure.
I guess the question
for
me,
and in fact, I'd lean no.
It comes down to what the other options are. That's the question.
Right.
So that's why I'm on the fence.
Well, if the other options, though, are Sherwood, Hoglander, you know what I mean?
But I mean the other options of the 12 forwards. Like, whether it's third line or not, you know, he's going to be in the lineup. I mean, they don't have that many guys unless it's like, do you call Niels Amon up to replace him so you have more center depth?
Well, no, but if you went with Hoglander, Suter, DeBrusk as a second line.
Yeah.
And then Sherwood plays with Heinen and Blueger.
Yeah.
And then Niels Amon plays on your fourth line and you try to make a more robust penalty kill.
With Ratu and Baines.
Yeah. And look, the fourth line might play 8 minutes some nights.
Yeah.
Might play 7 minutes some nights. But, like, I want Amon up here to flesh out the penalty kill.
Yeah.
And, Lekker Mackey goes back to...
Yeah, that's probably close enough. You give up a little bit of the offensive potential, but you get the extra center, yeah. You get the penalty.
Because I think that's
fine.
I think, like, how's this team going to win? How's this team going to win?
Like, now, it's really getting back to the identity stuff.
Yeah, and it's not exactly a murderer's row of competition that they face on this road trip. It's like a who's who of non-playoff teams in the Eastern Conference, right? Mm-hmm. It's Buffalo, it's
Pittsburgh, Boston,
Ottawa.
Yeah.
I mean, Ottawa's probably the second toughest opponent they face other than Minnesota. It's Pittsburgh. You know what I mean? Like, this is not exactly a gauntlet road trip.
Mm-hmm.
But this team is shorthanded enough that I think you're probably looking to in hold the fort season, win some ugly games.
Yeah.
And you know, I kind of think the most direct route to doing that is to load up the top of your lineup and just like throttle the opposition, like come out 2-1, 2.5-1 in your top of the lineup minutes and then truly hold the fort everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be your best option. Now, maybe you could say, well, they're without last change, you have to be a little bit more reluctant to do that since you can't protect guys and on and on. And I'm sensitive to that, but you know, as much as Myers and Soucy get bogged down in their own end of the rank, like, they're good defensively. I'm not nervous about them in zone. I'm nervous about them getting out of the zone.
Yeah.
you know, Brännström, Desharnais, assuming that Desharnais is back, you know, they can hack it, especially if they're playing third pair minutes, in my view. I have actually really liked what the Canucks have gotten from that pair for the most part. And I think Pius Suter with, you know, guys like Hoglander, guys like DeBrusque, like, that should be fine.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not like that's completely bereft of talent.
No.
Right? Like, you signed Jake DeBrusque for 7 years. You signed Nils Hoglander for 3 years.
Yeah.
Right? Like, these guys, you've put some confidence in them. You've put some expectations on them. Well, we've seen what Pius Suter can do.
Yeah.
That's not a disaster line waiting to happen or anything.
So I'd like to see that. I'd like to see this team load up the top of their lineup and count on their stars to make the difference. Right. And then count on your depth to hold the fort. Count on your depth to do enough that you're able to win enough games and, you know, get 7 to 9 points on this road trip. And I think you're sitting OK, especially if Demko, Besser and Miller's returns, you know, come shortly thereafter. I think you're still positioned to go on a run and try and win the Pacific down the stretch if you're able to do something like that. And realistically, you could fail to do that and still find yourself in that position. But in terms of, you know, keeping that chance realistic, I think that's sort of what a successful road trip here would look like. That's just something I'd be curious to see. And I think probably gives this team their best chance of outperforming those expectations on this upcoming road trip. That to me would be fascinating. And then I just generally want to see Joshua Pettersson Garland because I think it'll work. Like, I just genuinely think it'll work with the way that Joshua can serve as a backboard in terms of what he can do with how smart Pettersson is as an F3, you know, like the idea that you've got Joshua filtering as an F1 players to, you know, Garland, where Garland's going to be annoying and buzzsawing about the ice. And then you've got Pettersson just trying to like read and react and anticipate where it's going to go. Like, to me, that takes advantage of all of their skill sets optimally. Like, it makes so much sense in my mind's eye. We've never seen it. And if we're not going to see it now, when are we ever going to see it? I mean, this is the time to sort of break glass in case of emergency, as it were, and sort of see exactly what that combo can do. I think it's going to look good. I think if they give it a shot, it'll look really good and give this team a chance to exceed expectations on this trip.
I think definitely doing the JT Miller, Quinn Hughes usage with Elias Pettersson, that's going to be key, right? We've talked so much about that five-man unit when Besser's there and how much they play together and the gear it gives them at the top of their lineup. That's going to be really important to replicate with Elias Pettersson. And even if it's not Pettersson and Garland together, you know, permanently with Joshua on this road trip, they're going to be playing a lot. There's going to be opportunities to mix and match, to double shift guys, right? Like, there's going to be situational opportunities that I would like at the very least to see them get some time and some looks together as well. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and we'll take a quick break here. But one of our favorites, Jason Buchla from Sportsnet, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. He joins us next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drantz. We're live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Now time to chat with one of our favorites here on the show. You see him on Sportsnet's NHL coverage. You read him on Sportsnet.ca. Former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. He's our guy, Jason Buchla. Jason, what's going on, man?
What's going on, fellas? How are you today?
We're doing well. It's been a very eventful couple of days, a very eventful season for the Vancouver
Canucks. Welcome, Books. We're in our hold the fort era. Hold the fort season in Vancouver.
You know, sorry to interrupt, Jay, but I was talking to Sammy Cosentino about 20 minutes ago, and I said, I'm coming on with the boys here in about 20, and he was already, it was like, I had to get warmed up. We were preparing for this conversation because he's like, you know that that's going to be a chaotic conversation today.
Yeah, I mean, it's been chaotic out here. There's no doubt about it. Now,
The Canucks. It's always chaotic.
There's only so much we can say about the JT Miller situation, right? Personal leave, we'll kind of leave it at that. But obviously, huge questions about how they're going to handle his absence on the ice. I mean, what did you think about game one? Yeah, it's a loss. I thought they looked pretty good against the Rangers last night.
I actually thought that they, given all the noise that's been surrounding the team, that I honestly thought they competed really hard. And I got to give a shout out to a guy like Connor Garland. There was a time a couple years ago where I wasn't sure he was worth the contract. I'm still not so sure. I don't know. Like on any given day, I'm not so sure he's worth that amount of money, but it is what it is on that side. But he's very quickly earned a ton of respect over the years. It's really built. Like when I started scouting Connor Garland in the Quebec League, we touched on it before. Like he was allergic to the defensive zone. Like anything from the defensive red line to his goal line was not his cup of coffee. And fast forward to, yesterday, the team needed him. They did. The team needed him somehow to be at the rink. And I thought that his compete was exceptional, especially given the fact that his life is upside down on a personal level right now, too. Excited, obviously. It's a very exciting time. But, these guys are creatures of habit, the way they prepare. And, Pettersson's upped his game. His compete is much, much better. He's moving his feet better. I love Kiefer Sherwood. Great signing. Just a lot of disjointed things going on right now. Hopefully they can weather the storm, fellas.
So, Kiefer Sherwood, great signing. Everyone agrees. Guy rocks. Jake DeBrusk, little bit too quiet around him in Vancouver right now. They're going to need him to step up without question. Look, he had 3 goals after 18 games last year, too. And we all know what happened for him and the Bruins down the stretch. I'm not trying to do the old Vancouver media, like, where's your concern level at with Jake DeBrusk? But clearly, they're going to need this guy to play at a higher level if they're going to weather the storm and hold the fort over the next few weeks.
He's averaging over 2 minutes per game on the power play, fellas. He doesn't have a power play tuck, and he's got 2 power play apples. So I thought last night...
First 2 games of the season, too. Books. Yeah, that came right away.
Wasn't really. Geez, I'm losing track of time that way already. So that stands out alone. That's an obscene statistic. That's not good news. Obviously, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out. But if I had to throw some rocks at a glass house last night, I thought DeBrusk was just okay. And there was a few segments or a few situations, especially in the second period, where I thought he could have taken made a more alert play, his read and react, or even just get a puck to the net, just be more assertive, like take charge type thing with the puck. And you're absolutely correct. His statistics aren't horrendous. I mean, when you look at it, what's he got, like 10 points, I guess. He's skating 16 minutes, but that 16 minutes, especially with the 6-game roadie coming up, that 16 should probably turn into, 19 and a half, I would suggest to you guys. So we're going to have to... the team is going to have to, and it's fair to expect a spike in his play. He's definitely got to carry the mail a little bit more religiously here in the next little while.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And one of the other players on the Canucks I wanted to ask you about, Books, young player, Lekkomäki, comes up. You know, he gets his first NHL goal in that disastrous loss against the Islanders last week, and he's played a few games here. And, you know, Drance and I were talking earlier in the show. Is it time for him to go back to Abbotsford? Does he need a little more seasoning? Has he done enough to keep earning those NHL minutes? What have you seen from Lekkomäki in his short stint with the Canucks?
He's learning on the job. So baby steps have been positive. Remember when we first talked about it, and we've always talked about this with him. I'm not so concerned about his catch and release in the middle of the ice, like playing the bumper on the power play, for example. I'm not even concerned about his vision. Like when he's getting pucks, you know, he's seeing it, he's making some plays. You can see what he's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the three zone detail and the overall, he's pressing. Like, I think that would be the best way I could describe it to you guys. You know, he's playing about 11 and a half minutes a night, I believe, at even strength. And he hasn't been terrible by any stretch of the imagination, but he's not quite there. That's the best way for me to describe it. And in a perfect world, I think that he still needs some more seasoning down there, which is fine. It's his first full year of pro hockey in North America, but there's been some significant progress. Let me tell you, he's way quicker. Yep. And way, way more on time in his overall, even compared to when I watched him at World Juniors in Sweden last year when he won player of the event, their MVP of the event. So good progress, but probably just a shade off.
The delineation that I was making in the last segment, Books, on Lekkomäki is I think he can do the job. If you want power play specialist, third liner for the next 3 weeks in Vancouver, I think he can do the job, but I don't know that he can fill that role and help you win, right? Like there to me, there's a difference. Like he can be fine there, but I don't think he's quite ready to help this team win at the NHL level. What's your thought on that gap?
I agree with that. I think, and that's not even being unfair. That's just a development curve. That's just the way it is.
Being able to do the job at 20 is amazing. That's a win.
Yeah, you know, it is a win. It's a win. You know, he's a Band-Aid for now, and he's showing he's got so much more ahead of him still. This is a process with him, and he's come a long, long way. Let's not forget how far he's come in the last year, and it's still going to continue to trend up that way. When I watch him play, Jancer, I kind of think about like where we were kind of rushing Tippett to our lineup back in the day, Owen Tippett in Florida, until it was like, he needs some time. And, because his best shift, he could rip a puck and do all these things, but really on balance, he couldn't get it done all the time. It wasn't going to take us to where we needed to go in short order. He needed time. And it's the same with Lekkomäki. It's going to be fine. He's made super, super strides in the last year. But, you know, for now, for where the Canucks are, and here's the other thing. Do you guys not, maybe you agree with this or not, tell me either way. It's fine with me. You know, I'm good. I like these discussions. But younger guys who are on their development curve, when some distractions start entering the scenario on the NHL roster, that's when you get gobbled up. Because, you see, when you have veterans in the room and your team is playing well and the team as a whole isn't fighting through injuries and a whole bunch of different things, that's when your veterans can pay more attention to you to assist you on the really hard days. When the team is disjointed and they got a lot of, you know, distractions, now those veteran guys, they really got to zero in on their own needs more than paying attention to the room. I know that sounds kind of crazy, but that's my experience. And then you can get gobbled up a little bit. And that would be my fear in short order when he's kind of surviving on the margins.
Well, the situation that immediately comes to mind when you bring that up, Books, is now it's different for a lot of reasons, but towards the end of Bruce Boudreau coaching here, right, and Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin were here, obviously, they sent Nils Höglander down to Abbotsford, and I think part of it was the situation is so unstable, right? Like there's friction between the front office and the coaching staff. They're not playing good hockey at the NHL level. I think part of the reasoning was, yeah, we'd like Höglander to get some AHL time, but we also just kind of want to keep him away from the situation in the NHL. And again, very different now than then. Obviously, they have stability with Tocchet as the head coach, but I do think you're right that sometimes if if it's hold the fort time, right, and it's just, okay, we got to all kind of hunker down and, you know, circle the wagons and get through this next stretch, that could be a bit of a tough situation for a young player to thrive in.
Absolutely. That's a really good way to describe it. And it doesn't matter how much structure you have with the group, because you said it best, like the coach has the room, everything's fine. Like there's tons of structure here, but there's that, but so now what you do is you go in search of, you know, 15, 20% more out of Pettersson. And then you start leaning on the Heinens and the Blugers and all these other guys for an extra 2 or 3 minutes a night. And that's where you just kind of bridge the gap between now and when everybody comes back in the lineup, whenever that happens.
A mechanical observation that I'm curious to get your take on, Books, because this is something that I am not good at, admittedly, relative to somebody
whoa,
like you.
What just happened there?
You're really
mark
speaking.
The time down. You're mark really the time down.
So, my observation, watching Lekker Mäki play in the NHL and work at Canucks training camp and in battle drills down low against NHL players, is that there's another gear that he's going to have to get to in terms of core strength and edge work to do some of the, like, cross-back, protect-the-puck stuff that, you know, Connor Garland and even Nils Höglander dine out on to win puck battles as smaller players at the NHL level. Like, that, to me, there's a mechanical issue there that I don't think can be solved in season. That's going to probably require reps, recognition, and then some targeted physical work and on-ice work over the course of an entire summer to get to that level. That's sort of my view. How do teams approach working with a player on something like that?
So this is really interesting. That's definitely a player development takeaway, and I'm with you. So his lower half leverage, and so his skating, anybody who wants to watch his skating, especially on straight lines, really, his first three steps, really quick. Even right now, they're quick. He's way quicker than he used to be. He doesn't plane out exceptionally fast yet for the NHL, but you're right. If you're working off the cycle or you're working a tight turn on at the NHL level, let's say you work off the you're down low on the cycle, you work to the half wall, now you got to spin to space, and you got to, you know, get ahead of somebody, or you got to have a guy in your back pocket and kind of body up against them to keep them, to shield them. Those are things that he's going to need to get stronger at and work at. Now, listen, Connor Garland, when he first arrived, he's 28 now, but Connor Garland is, how tall is Connor Garland? 5'9" or 5', whatever he is. He's,
sure.
But he plays 5'5", like when he hunches over, but his lower body is exceptionally strong and fluid. And that took time even for him and his player style. So you're absolutely correct. And when you watch him, this is what's fascinating. It's too bad that a season ticket holder can't go up to Abbotsford. Maybe some of them do, to watch an American League game and then come watch him at the NHL game. Because when you watch American League tape of Lekker Mäki, he's not slow at that level. And the things that get exposed at the NHL level, it shows the leap it is to get to play in the NHL in a middle six, never mind top six equation, because your matchups are so hard and everybody's so much more physically capable and they're all pretty fast, you know, and the guys who aren't fast are crafty veterans who lean on you and make life miserable on you even more than the American Hockey League, because that's just the way it is. I mean, it's triple A baseball compared to the major leagues, right?
Yeah, the guys who aren't fast are probably also, like, wicked strong, right? So if they do catch up to you, they're going to take the puck away from you. The blue line, especially beyond Hughes and Hronek, continues to be a pretty big question mark for the Canucks. And one name that we've heard in connection with the Canucks is Marcus Pettersson from Pittsburgh. Now, left-shot defenseman, and you'd probably look at it and say a right shot would be a bit of a better fit. But, you know, taking that into consideration and just Marcus Pettersson's game in general, do you see that as a fit that could help solidify and stabilize things on the Canucks blue line?
Absolutely. I'm a Marcus Pettersson fan, actually. I think he's a guy that has flown under the radar a little bit over the years. He's really serviceable. I know that sounds just like bland, but he really is. And he's competitive. He can match up against the top two line combinations. And he can take some of the weight off a Myers or a Soucy when they're not quite on. And let's be honest, that pairing, at least so far, hasn't been to standard, I would suggest. Like, they haven't been the best version of themselves.
Even yet. That's tactful, Books. They've been worse than that, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And well, I like both players, but, like, it's been worse than not up to standard. They've been struggling.
So today's my night. I made a decision before I came on that today was going to be my nice day. And I was, you know, I didn't want to.
What's
you know,
that be, like?
Yeah. you know, I'm just giving everybody a little bit of a benefit of the doubt because I feel like yeah. I'm from the outside looking in that there's a lot that this team has been trying to deal sure. with. And I think that physically and mentally, everybody just gets kind of worn out a little bit and they're yep. not the best version of themselves.
Fair.
I'm taking that angle. But Marcus Pedersen's a guy that can eat minutes, fellas. I mean, he's a north of 22-minute a night guy. The best news is that any offense you get out of him, it's secondary, but it's a bonus. And he's not horrible that way. Like he'll give you 20 points in a year, 25 points, but he kills penalties and he matches up and you'll eat hard minutes. And that's a good news thing. And let's be honest, the management staff are familiar with the player. We've had this discussion before, and so is the coach. So that would be a really good fit in my estimation. The cost is going to be interesting, I would suggest, just because his name seems – he's the coup de grace today, right? Like, he's yes. the guy. And everybody's driving up the cost of whatever that's going to look like.
Books, Tom Volander – Let's get the update on Tom Volander. His scoring has slowed a little bit the last few weeks, but the praise is still rolling in for his sophomore campaign. Was elevated to play with Lane Hutson. Cole Hutson, Lane Hudson's brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, they tried him at length with Lane Hutson last year, and it didn't really work. He ended up being better with that big Maple Leafs prospect whose name I can't quite remember. Cade Weber.
Shut down D.
Yeah, the... He ended up being a better fit on that in a more defensive-oriented pair. How's his game trending here? And you know, really at this point, given sort of the Canucks' needs on the back end, I do think we have to escalate this conversation from being like, how's his game trending? To being at the level of, is his game trending sufficiently well for him to be an option at the NHL level after his college season?
Cup of coffee. Maybe Black Ace in playoffs, but I would hope that he gets playoff games in Abbotsford. My semi-short answer is if the Canucks have aspirations of going on a deep run in playoffs, it's one thing for a forward to get thrust into things at the end of the college season. It's an altogether different thing at the hardest time of the year for a defenseman to get thrust into the equation. So not a lot of guys are capable of that. I'm going the other way on Willander a little bit here. Nothing negative, but he's the same today that he was 2 weeks ago. And I'm curious to see what he's like 2 weeks from now. The example you just gave is very factual. When he's playing with Hutson, this is a good news story about Willander. I believe you can play him with a player like Hutson. So let's just say that fast track 3 years from now, he can take shifts with Quinn Hughes. Okay. You get my drift. Like he can complement mm-hmm. that kind of whirling dervish. But there's going to be a sacrifice there. He'll dial back his offense. And he did that with the Swedish national team. That was his role coming through with the national team in Sweden. So, you know, he's being asked to do a lot at BU right now. He's kind of like their guy, their veteran guy. He's logging, I believe, last I looked, the most amount of minutes out of any D there. But the Cade Weber example that you showed last, or you're talking about from last year, like Weber's a 6'5", 6'6", a big blocky kind of shot blocker guy. And that allowed him to evolve offensively and handle the puck more. So he can do a variety of things. That's the good news. When they pair him up with a Hutson right now, that's saying to me that they want Hutson to have some protection and go and play to his identity and Willander to dial it back a bit offensively. So we'll see where his numbers go in that area.
Books, great stuff as always, man. You were extremely nice today to all the players. We appreciate that very much.
I can tell you guys are very impressed with me. I'll take that tongue in cheek. It's good to talk to you anyways, boys, and stay in touch. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. We'll talk again soon. That is Jason Bukala from Sportsnet's NHL coverage, former director of NHL scouting, joining us here on a Wednesday, as he always does, and big Marcus Pedersen fan. Confirmed from Jason Bukala, and a good update on Tom Volander in the NCAA there as well. I want to pass this along. Congratulations officially to Connor Garland and his family. His wife had had their baby. It's named, and this is true, Rick Tockett passing this along, that they named him Quentin after Robert Shaw's character from Jaws, from the movie Jaws. Of course, Connor Garland, a big shark fan.
Big fan of sharks. And sharks are cool.
Sharks are cool. And Connor Garland,
Apex Predator,
is from Massachusetts, right? Which is kind of where Jaws is set. So I wonder if there's like a connection there. I feel like that's how he got into...
I'm sure there is.
That's how he got into sharks. Jaws is a great movie.
Jaws is a fantastic
movie. And Robert Shaw as Quentin is awesome in it. So
now
I'm like, man, I want to go watch Jaws.
Yeah, no, I know. Me too. Dunna. Great score, right?
Such a great score.
Like, legit one of the greatest.
Should we tier awesome things about Jaws?
Number one, the score. Honestly, number one is the score. Number two is the fact that they don't show the shark.
Yes. Yep. Number three, we're going to need a bigger boat.
Yep.
That's great. That's dynamite right there. You can't leave that out of the top three.
Number four, blowing up the shark. For sure. Like, the fact that the solution at the end of the film isn't, like, spear through the eye or...
Mm-hmm. Nope. Like, we got dynamite.
Blow him up.
Blow up the shark. That's what it's all about.
I love... Yeah, blowing up the shark. Let's go. other update from Canucks practice, which we can get into more in the final segment.
Not Jaws related.
No. Is... Yeah, we'll hear from Tockett, in fact, next segment, but... does seem like Brock Besser, described as day-to-day by Rick Tockett following Canucks practice. Club will check in with the team's medical staff to decide whether or not he's going on the trip or if he might join them on the road. So, at some point, like later on. So, Besser anyway, not a wholly negative update the way I'd feared when he wasn't on the ice for practice or beforehand.
So, there you go. That's the latest from Canucks practice. Somebody texted in, how about a spoiler alert before mentioning the blowing up of the shark?
Wow, that's...
I'm pretty sure they're joking.
That's like making an FDR joke and someone being like, too soon, man.
The shark in the end? What?
Multiple people saying spoiler alert. Guys,
the movie came out almost 50 years ago.
Yeah,
all right?
No, in this day and age, you get like a week.
Yeah.
Max.
No, we're not doing spoiler alerts for Jaws here, guys.
No, we're barely doing spoiler alerts for, like, The Wild Robot.
Okay, on that note, we're going
to... Would you do spoiler alert at the end of The Wild Robot?
Yes, I would.
Come on.
Well, that's
been out for
a month. That's a kid's movie, though.
Guys, I don't think that texter was being serious.
No, I think they're joking. But that's a kid's movie. I don't want to ruin it for a kid.
I mean? All the children listening to Canucks
know.
Talk.
People drive around.
This program is 18 plus, actually.
People drive around with their kids in their car. Maybe not.
Well, you keep swearing on air.
I don't know.
It happened one time.
I don't know. People are playing the podcast when they're like getting dinner ready. The kids can hear. I don't want to ruin some little kid's day as they're about to go see the Wild Robot.
What happened at the end?
Although, you know what? Kids don't even really like...
care.
Kids don't care.
No.
They're just like, yeah, I don't care if I know. It's still going to be awesome to watch it. That's a healthy approach.
I'll be honest with you. I also don't care.
I'm not a big anti-spoiler guy. Whatever.
I don't care at all. I'm happy to know what happens. I'm happy to not know what happens. It doesn't change my experience in the least.
Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father.
Are you...
Spoiler alert. Darth Vader kills a lot of rebels at the end of Rogue One. By the way.
Are you... If you watch like a show or a movie or even read a book where there's like a central mystery, are you like trying to solve it the whole time?
Oh, no.
I don't even want to think about it. I'm just like, they'll tell me eventually what the deal is
and then
I'll find out.
I'm cursed to know. And you know who's actually even better than me? I'm cursed to know. I figure things out very quickly in narrative form, but my wife is even better than me.
Well, tell us how smart you are, Thomas.
My wife is even better than me. My wife is insanely good at it. My wife always has the answer, and she's like, do you think this is what happened? And I'm like, oh, exactly it.
My wife is really good at that, too. And she's like, do you think it's this? I'm like, I haven't given it a single second of thought.
Oh, that's nice.
It hasn't even entered my mind.
That's nice. I'm very...
I'm like, I don't know. It could be that.
There was one show on Netflix. I'm trying to think of what it was called. It was called... Anyway,
Red Shoe Diaries?
No. Yeah, Red Shoe Diaries. I always could predict what would happen in Red Shoe Diaries. Yeah, me too. It's like I bet these people won't connect in a heated sexual moment of passion. like, do you think that's how it's gonna end, Dom? Come on. Red shoe diary. No, okay. It was called Behind Her Eyes.
Okay.
And Behind Her Eyes has like a very, very strange metaphysical twist. But I was watching it and I was just like, oh, and I completely had it. Right, like it was just a little bit too obvious in terms of the visual cues.
A lot of people texting and saying, you better not spoil the wild robot. Do not spoil the wild robot.
No, I won't.
That one we're not spoiling. Jaws.
It's been out for long enough.
The shark blows up.
It's been out for long enough.
All right, we're gonna take a break here.
Have you seen it yet?
Wild Robot? No, I haven't.
I'm really excited.
Yeah, you know,
I'm going to watch it at some point.
I am going to watch it. I want to read the book with my kid first. She's like just...
Oh, there's a book.
Yeah, it's based on a book. She's like just old enough for the book. So I kind of want to do that first, and then we'll probably watch it like on demand.
I just resent...
You know what my next theater trip is going to be? Moana 2, baby.
Ooh.
The kids are excited for that one.
You know what? I don't know.
No, I'll enjoy Moana. I'm excited for Moana.
That was an audio drop of you doing a Moana. Okay, let's go to break.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll do an abbreviated whiteboard. We'll hear from Rick Tockett next here. Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.